It is now 10:01. We're calling this month's meeting of the Tarrant County Board of Managers meeting to order. We have a roll call, please. Here.
Pinto. Robert Brooks.
Present.
Tim Hall.
Here.
Scott Hofstrom.
Here.
Brett Richardson.
Here.
Elena Williamson. Chairperson, we do have a call.
Okay, do we have any announcements?
Sarah, would you mind introducing Rachel for us?
Rachel is new to our team as the implementation prime analyst experience.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Today's your first day.
First day. She's so excited.
Thank you so much.
Where are you from?
I worked at Lake Worth Police Department as a crime analyst for the last 6 years. And over the last year, I've been substitute teaching 6 to 10.
Well, welcome to the district. Ms. Insko, could you please turn on your camera? There you go. Other agenda announcements.
That is it, sir.
Then we have the next thing is the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve? Motion made by Chief Hall. Second by Mayor Richardson. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say no. Motion carries unanimously. Legislative update, Mr. Paxton.
Good morning. I am here to tell you to hang in there. You have a 1 week to keep getting campaign mail pieces, hearing commercials on the radio, or seeing them on TV. And I'm 99% of my update is going to be on these elections. But before I jump into the primaries, I want to talk about special election that happened last month in Senate District 9. And Senate District 9, if you remember, was Senator Kelly Hancock's. Senator Hancock was a really good champion. And he resigned from office to become the acting comptroller. Senate District 9 is a solidly Republican district. President Trump won that district during his last election by 7. Senator Hancock had won that district by. So it shocked all of the people like me who closely watched these elections. Democratic candidate beat the Republican candidate by 14 points. And the Republican candidate, the Republican candidate vastly outspent the Democratic candidate. So what that did was it gave Democrats across the state hope going into these elections, and it put Republicans on notice they can't take anything for granted. So going into the elections, March 3rd is our primary date. Obviously, early voting is going on now. And really, the races you're seeing so much of on TV and radio are not races that are really going to impact us in the legislature. You're talking about these statewide races for attorney general, for United States senator. Comptroller could it impact us, but ag commissioner, things like that. And with the U.S. Senate race, it's shaping up to be a very bitter fight in the Democratic primary between Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett from Dallas, State Representative James Tallarico from Central Texas. The incumbent, John Cornyn, is facing 7 challengers, including the current Attorney General, Ken Paxton. I feel like there's probably going to be a runoff in that race. If that happens, the runoff will be May 26th. But when we get into the Texas legislature, those races are going to end. And in the Texas Senate, you have 4 open seats right now. There are senators who either decided to resign, move on. but you only have three incumbents who actually have a primary challenger. I think almost all of them will have a challenger in the general election in November. So we're not going to see that much turnover in the Senate. And in the House, there are 21 state representatives who decided not to run again. So we're going to see 21 new faces at a minimum. And then you have 38 incumbents who do have a primary challenger. And it sounds like a large number, but it's nowhere near 2 years ago when Governor Abbott came out against many, many state representatives who did not support his voucher plan, and he campaigned against them, and they lost their seats. So there's not going to be as much turnover in the House as it was going into last session. Through these elections, the legislature is primarily focused on March 3rd. They're not, interim committees have been meeting, but very few and none that impact us. Once these primaries are over, you know, well, in Texas, the general election are usually not as competitive as these primaries. The election to go into the legislature is typically decided in the primary election. So once this is over in March 3rd, we will have a better vision of who is going to be in office in January, which is going to help us shape our strategy going into the session. We'll know who will be in office, what their primary pet issues are, how best to approach them, and who we are going to identify. And one other thing I want to get to before you have any questions. I think I touched on this during our last meeting. Obvious for the Alliance resigned in late November, early December. She needed to cut back on the number of her clients due to some health issues, and so she resigned from the Alliance. And the Alliance has been looking at candidates since that time. They've asked me to recommend someone. I've recommended someone who's made the top two. The Alliance has narrowed it down to the top two. I've worked with both of the final two candidates. They would both be great for the Alliance and represent them very well. One of the folks is a person that I recommended who has extensive experience with, worked for the House Ways and Means chairman for a number of years. Then Governor Abbott picked him to become his budget director. So the Alliance is having interviews, I believe, this week, and then determine who that person is going to be. And I'm hoping by the next Alliance meeting, we will have that person in place so we can really get moving forward. But I want to make sure you're aware of that before we got any questions. But again, it's all elections right now and will be until next week. And that's all I have for you.
Any questions for Mr. Paxton? Thank you, Bill.
Yes, sir.
Stay strong. Keep marching forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have the executive director report.
The monthly statistics of the public education analytics, which is on page 11 through 16 of your packet. Training is also in the
morning.
Super busy as always. Public education has been a lot of events. We had 8 Safety Smart rallies spread throughout the county over the last 3 months. We've done 911 story times, 911 presentations. One of the really cool things we did also was the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo ticket hits. We had a total of 5 of those, again, all throughout, and she had great responses for that. In November, they did a Family Feeding Families event, which had over 1,500 attendees, which is a very large event for something that we do. To compare to, in December, we had the First Responder Bowl, which again had over 2,000 attendees. So absolutely fantastic. We've had increases on all social media platforms. So that is a very good thing. Anytime we have classes, we promote it. We hope y'all are promoting social media platforms as well. We put really good information out there. On the training side, we had over the last 3 months 12 classes, which we did have two licensing classes, one in November and one in January, which we total licensed 9 telecommunicators. And we still hold strong at our 100%. So we're holding firm.
Our training
has increased with the number of rooms. And so over those 3 months, we did report a total of 4,487 hours to team, which is a fantastic number to get this education. Did you want me to go?
We can, but before we do that, I have gone to 3 of the smart safety rallies. That is a tremendous.
We are very proud of it, so much so we've had other counties, even other states that have contacted our public education wanting to know, how do we kick something? Of course, getting the backing of the radio station and the funding and things like that is a huge thing, and we appreciate y'all's support with us continuing to do that. We continue.
Thank you for attending.
Hearing that, this might be a good presentation to either NAPCO or NENA. I think it would be well attended.
Absolutely. I'm actually trying to get apps, but maybe you have to do wear multiple hats where they're doing on the console and having to do public education. How can we get something like this up?
I'll look forward to seeing y'all there.
I'm going to jump. Oh, did anybody have any questions about training or
move forward?
I am going to jump to pages 17 and 18. I had the wonderful opportunity to, I guess, chair the 40th anniversary grand opening celebration that we had on December 17th. It's been a little bit since we've seen you guys, but we want to appreciate it. That event was set for 150 guests. We had people reaching out wanting to know how they could come, how they could be a part of it. Along with you all, we also had Cleet McAllister that spoke, as well as Manny Ramirez that was able to speak about the district and the opening.
It was very well attended. We heard the
rumblings through the halls, but everybody was enjoying the food, the decorations, the company, and just putting our efforts out there and letting people see what we were about. We did send out a survey to our staff also wanting to know if we were to hold future events similar. And we got a great response. We had, I believe, almost 20 responses total come back from all staff. We were asking about things such as, how was the event overall? What about the communication that led up to that? How did we do as leadership letting you all know what was happening? What was the flow of the event like for you? Did it go well? And overall, just
what would you like to see for me?
I can say we had all positive responses. If we did a Likert scale and we did not have anybody who was satisfied or dissatisfied or very dissatisfied. And then any comments that we received for future events were just minimal things such as, get more people from staff involved. We all want to be a part of it, and keep the food that we had because it was really good. If y'all did not have the food, it was fantastic. So I think that if we were to hold any future events, we are really set for success on it. So any questions about the event, or I hope y'all enjoyed yourselves. It was a lot of fun.
It was a great event, but in the write-up, I would appreciate it in front of Manny Ramirez's name if you would put Commissioner Precinct 4. That makes it consistent with the rest of it. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sarah, monthly call volumes. And just they're on page 713.
Nothing that stands out in the monthly call volumes. We want to mention that we are struggling
with providers
more and more. And so you will not see.
Is that better? Better? We're having an issue. I got the thumbs up. Thank you, Aubrey. Siricom has now turned into Propio, which when that occurs, a significant amount of customer service. So we may have them attend our next board meeting to hold them accountable to see what measures they're taking to improve their service. But you will not see some of those reports here as they're struggling to provide the analytics on some of those breakdowns. We will be enhancing language translation with another solution, and we're looking to see what reports can be pulled out of that as we deploy that. Hopefully, that will become more the common place provider and less with LanguageLine and Probio. Any questions on that?
If there are specific questions that you would like to them answer, I would appreciate you letting me know what those questions are ahead of time.
Okay. We'll be putting those together.
And I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Sarah? Thank you, ma'am. Doing a great job.
Danny is going to talk about recognition of employees, operational excellence, and cybersecurity.
Good morning. Elena had mentioned that the PSAPs do work in charge of cybersecurity as well. Just going to give you a quick briefing, an incident that happened at NetCom just in January. So January 7th, there was a threat actor that attempted to gain remote access to computer systems by impersonating a Motorola technician. They made a phone call into the dispatch, pretending to be from Motorola, explaining to them they were trying to push an update to the system that was failing. And they said, if we need to get access, and if we can't get access, then you're gonna start seeing calls fail to come through. The PSAP let us know that just that day before, the management team had gone over operational procedures on what to do if someone's gain access to the PSAP and you don't know who they are. So following their best practices, they got together, got the manager on the call and asked, okay, do you know who this person is? And they determined that they just needed to push them off until the morning until they could talk to wherever they needed to talk to gain access to the IT systems. So if you guys are not too familiar, which I'm sure you are, NetCom representing Keller, Southlake, Colleyville, and Westlake. So an incident happening at NetCom wouldn't just affect one city, it would actually affect potentially four police departments and fire departments if something was to happen. We have recognized members of that team that in your packet, I believe it's page two, there between myself is Marie Trower, assistant manager. Also involved was Stephanie Wright, advisor, and manager Randy Kidwell. On the at the manager's at the manager's PSAP meeting, we did invite the members of NetCom to come and receive an award. Marie Trower was able to attend, and on the plaque that she has there in front of her, it says Operational Excellence in Cybersecurity, Tarrant County 911 Emergency Assistance District recognizes Marie Trower for turning training into action and successfully mitigating the cybersecurity and the 911 infrastructure.
Did Ms. Trower actually take the call?
I believe it may have been Stephanie Wright, but I know all three were involved in making this the decision to determine what to do to take action.
Well, if you'd be predisposed to writing up something for the person who actually took the call,
okay,
I would guess that the board would be willing to sign off on that, because without that person doing what they were supposed to, none of the other stuff would have happened. So we need to celebrate those people who follow their training.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Definitely. Yes. So the day that that happened, there was notifications that were sent out by Motorola, ourselves. Sherry even sent out messages to other districts and COGS in the state to make them aware. Motorola later came out and sent a briefing out to other PSAPs as well to say, hey, there's someone out there pretending to be a Motorola technician. They're calling various PSAPs. And they did see that that incident was played out in other states as well.
Kind of like network, like I say, it happens out of state. So something like this occurs somewhere else. How do y'all get there?
Definitely. So I can speak to a little bit of noise in the background. I can speak to for cybersecurity, there's quite a number of different groups that we can share information through. Just like PSAPs themselves are, you know, have themselves on distribution lists, they can share information. You have your inlets and TLETs, you know, if it's a high incident that's affected multiple places. It could be just as easily as doing email. With this instance, Motorola has a cybersecurity initiative called the PSTA, Public Safety Threat Alliance. And through that is how they shared the information out to the other states as well. Any other questions?
Meeting last month, that's when we did the presentation, they all received flags. And Danny did the presentation.
Correct.
Fine work. Stay vigilant. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Who is going to get the board? Progress of our output partial sale 2620 airport relay on page 6 through 67.
Good morning, everyone. There is, like Sherry mentioned, that on page 56, there's like a prospectus of the realtor that we hired, who we hired for doing. And in your binders and in your sleeves, we've received our first LOI, which is a letter of intent from a prospective buyer who made us an offer for $577,460 to purchase that piece of property we have. TxDOT valuated that piece of land at $519,000 back in May of 2024, which is higher than what, which is lower than what we. If you look at those separate sheet of papers in the sleeve of your binder, we are planning to count to $600,000 to increase that amount to $600,000. And again, this is the first. And if the prospective buyer does agree with that, we are not going to be under a contract. And if you look at the inspection period, there are some language that we are proposing to add that we are not going to be bound by this offer, and any earnest money that will come to us will stay with us, and we will be still be able to seek other offers during the diligence period that they are. Correct. That is the offer, but the
period, though, in the document when it written words is 150.
I see. Yes, I got you. Yeah, we will correct that and send it. This hasn't been sent to the buyer yet. So yes, this is just the offer that we are receiving, we have received, and the proposal that we are going to make.
Has Mr. Northern offered a estimate of what the property would be worth after TxDOT finishes?
We haven't talked about that. No. That's what the counteroffer is before the text audit is going to be finished. But I believe Mr. Brunson is asking that there's there after the text audit is finished. No.
We've had that discussion before that once TxDOT is through, that becomes a prime piece of property if we hold on to it.
And again, we
Just
can
thought.
go in a direction that the board tells us to.
We would need that information before we could give you direction.
I will ask that question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Anil.
Thank you.
Mr. Paxson did a great job laying this out what's happening. We are going to be hosting the June Alliance meeting for the state here. And if any board members would like to attend, you can have Hillary attend without having a quorum. So if anyone is interested in attending an Alliance meeting with all their executive members of the school, please let me know.
I want to.
Okay. You want to? There's one. They can't hear. They can't hear me.
Good.
What do y'all need with me? You're good. Infrastructure. The invitation is for three board members to attend the June Alliance meeting. We have one so far. I do know those dates, Sandy. It's the first Wednesday in June. It's always the first Wednesday of every month. Yeah, June. June 2nd and June 3rd. So June 2nd is an operational meeting where my staff and other staff members come to learn updates on GIS or network, and it's kind of a working group. And then the Wednesday is the director's speech. 9 o'clock. 8 o'clock is breakfast.
And before we get off the executive director report, we've got NENA and APCO coming up this summer. And I would appreciate by the next meeting, if you're planning on attending one of those, y'all could let Sherry know. Because I do think that we have some board members who want to attend more than one. Prove that. Until everybody's had an opportunity to weigh in whether they want to go or not. And I would strongly encourage you to take the time to go to one of them.
Thank you. That'll help Sandy a lot.
Now we go to the ninth one. 12,000 Willow Spring. No, that's right, isn't it?
Thank you all for coming this morning. I've actually had our construction people line up right out to experience what we've been going through. So thought y'all would like that. Sorry, they should have been done by about 9 this morning. So makes it a little difficult. But obviously, we are pressing forward. We are making headway at finishing this building. We're still wrapping up a few issues with the internal buildings, some of the HVAC things. As you can see, gonna see in the packet, I described that a little bit. But that's being worked out this week, hopefully, and we're moving forward there. And you see, we have some fencing that's actually been put up. They've done a lot finishing up some of the phase three. which is the site work around the building. And about 2 weeks ago, we finally got the final permit for Fort Worth. So the fencing was able to begin again. So they're working on that, and we're just nailing down the final bits of that. We're hoping that in that April timeframe, we will be quite a bit of this. So that's a positive. And there we go.
No more wasp problems.
Just in my office. Odd. It's like somebody planted them. Who knows? Any other questions?
Any questions for Gavin? Thank you, sir.
Thank you all very much.
Appreciate you. Next, GN911.
All right. So we are about 80% of the way through the next gen project with OSP migrations. Hard at work at all the PSAPs and touring around the district. The team has been very active out in the field, so we will be making visits. The end of that project. So seeing what availability each PSAP has in the next gen world. And then I think I'm supposed to talk about feet.
Well, before you go to things like will we be able to start disconnecting circuits?
Not just yet. So we will need to, it'll probably be a bit. So we'll need to evaluate.
Our risk audio cut off a little bit. So can you repeat what your whole update again?
We're about 80% through the OSP migrations for next gen. The team's been hard at work visiting every PSAP with every OSP migration, doing all kinds of test calls with the carriers. And now we will be discussing contingency options with every PSAP. So I think we actually meet with Arlington today on that. So on the circuit disconnects, we will need to evaluate what we want to disconnect and the timing of that. And the reason being, there's always going to be some kind of straggler or contingency path that has not been, one of the OSPs forgot, for example. So we don't want to disconnect 911 trunks until that traffic has been evaluated and moved appropriately. We still know there's going to be some legacy transfers. I know we look forward to disconnecting those as soon as possible, saving some money. However, we do need to be strategic about it.
And since we've previously talked about those potential savings, I would ask that this project stay open till all circuits have been disconnected, just so we have visibility and it doesn't fall under the carpet.
Yes, sir. We actually had one of our neighbors disconnect some things that should not have been disconnected and then severely impacted all of our transfers to those areas. So we don't want to do that.
We thank you and appreciate it.
Okay, so on FIFA, the subcommittee, the 911 subcommittee has kind of ceased. We're not meeting anymore, but we all know that we have a solution in place to deploy additional services to our PSAPs, including language translations. We'll be working with each city on PBX outbound dialing for international calls. We also acquired 2 international SIM cards so that we can do those tests. And then we've identified the first 6 for those solutions to get deployed in time for FIFA. Any questions on?
Sarah, I have a question.
Okay, we'll probably continue being vague in some of these unless we go into executive session, being that after the NetCom incident, we're trying. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, the audio is cutting out. Can y'all hear me okay?
Uh-huh.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, my only question was, and if you need to hold this for executive session, I understand. I just, basic question around the international dialing. Is there any cost to each agency, or maybe talk a little bit about the requirements on the agency to support the outbound dialing?
The support
for international calls.
The support that we'll need is working with the PBX specialty, either a vendor or the on-staff folks at each PSAP, so that we can make that work leaving our system and in through your PBX system. And then, yes, there probably will be, unless you have some kind of international plan, it's going to be using your circuits that will need to be accommodated for and cost-wise.
Thank you.
Any other questions on FIFA? All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next item, RN26-008, Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, FY 2025.
Have Mr. Audit Firm, the UCFR.
Thank you all for having me. Unlike whatever they're doing outside, we are done with the fiscal year 2025 annual audit. And so I'm here to talk with you about our audit. This district that you all should have a copy of. As the CPA who helped put this document together, I would love to give you the 5 minutes per page version of this 49-page document. But in the interest of time, and it's a little early in the day to put anybody to sleep, I'm going to hit just a couple of highlights, but I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have about the audit process or these financial statements. So if you'll open with me in the Annual Comprehensive Financial Report to page one, that'll be not Roman numeral page one, it'll be a few pages in. Page one is the independent auditor's report, and it is ultimately what we were engaged, which is to perform an audit in accordance with government auditing standards and render an opinion on whether or not these financial statements are materially accurate in accordance with. To go ahead and spoil all the suspense, in the second paragraph, we are rendering what's known as an unmodified audit opinion, or you've probably heard the term clean opinion be used. And what that means is that based on our audit, we do believe, in our opinion, that these financial statements are materially accurate in accordance with accounting principles. Now, a few things to keep in mind. Materially accurate doesn't mean perfect. We don't look at every dollar. We don't look at every transaction. That would be very cost prohibitive. And even if we did look at every dollar and every transaction, there are inherent limitations to the type of audit we're doing. Materially accurate really is what would influence decision-making. For example, I can tell you that the first thing we do when Anil gives us numbers is round it all off to the dollar. That doesn't make sense, but I don't make sense. I don't look at cents. So every number in here might be off by as much as a dollar or two for rounding, just to give you an idea. So as part of the audit, it is a risk-based approach. So there are certain things we look at a lot. There are certain things we don't look at very much at all. Believe it or not, where one of the biggest areas where I spend the least amount of time is on your wireless service fees. And the reason for that is that we can run a report off the Texas Comptroller's website that they tell us exactly how much money they have sent y'all in wireless service fees. So even though it's something that is a very quick and easy audit procedure for us, it's a very high level of... Sir.
What about the wireline service fees?
Great question. Unfortunately, there's no button I can press to get anybody to tell me what those are. We have in the past, sometimes we'll send confirmation requests to some of the larger telecom companies. And then we usually would also maybe select a sample of some smaller ones and send them a letter, usually that Sherry or Anil have signed, that says, hey, tell us, confirm for our auditors how much you've sent us. The problem is a lot of those companies, we have a really hard time getting them to send us that letter back. And so we typically, what we do is do some more in-depth analysis. We do get into some data analytics like how often are they paying you? What's the dollar amount of the money that they're paying you? And really what we're doing is we set some dollar scopes as far as anything that looks kind of out of line, like if something jumps way up or way down. We start asking some more questions about those to make sure that there's a reason for why those things look the way that they do. Does that answer your question?
And is your efforts notated in this report?
So our reports don't discussed specific audit procedures. It discussed.
A no is okay.
I'm sorry.
A no is okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Does that cover your question?
Yeah.
Great.
Answer my question.
So ultimately, we did render an unmodified or a clean opinion. There are a lot of different things I could cover in this document. Ultimately, it was a clean audit, and a couple of things I wanted to point out. I saw some of you were eyeing the attached letter, the bound letter that we have. I won't put anyone to sleep by going through all of it, because it is very boilerplate and reads almost exactly like it did last year, and essentially lists out a bunch of bad things that could have happened but didn't. Under our professional standards as your auditors, there's a number of things that we might be, such as if we had discovered fraud or if we were aware of problems with the books, if we had had big disagreements with management, things of that nature, but there were none of those things. And so this letter reads very, very similar to how it has in the past. A couple of other things as part of our audit, there's another letter in the very back of the ACFR. I'm not going to go over that. I'm not going to flip to it, but ultimately what that letter is talking about is some other work that we do and things that we consider as part of the audit. Since we are dealing with taxpayer funds, we don't want good things. We do consider, in other words, not just getting to a clean audit and accurate financial information, but we consider if there are issues with the processes and procedures that the district has to make sure that without us intervening. That looks like a lot of different things. We look at especially the accounts payable process, the payroll process. Anytime cash is coming in or going out, that's something we give special attention to. I know something that Anil and I had talked about this year and in the past, being a really big focus is procurement with purchasing, especially with the NG911 funds that came from the state. Those federal funds have a lot of strings attached to them. And one of, for example, the things that is codified in the Code of Federal Regulations that is that if you're going to get and spend that federal money, you have to have a purchasing policy and you have to follow what's in it. And so it's, for example, some of the issues with the federal grant funds, some of those compliance or control issues come into play. So whereas it's not something that might necessarily affect our audit in terms of whether or not the financials are accurate, it is something that we consider some of those processes to be input in there to see if there are really big risks for how those types of transactions are handled. Ultimately, though, again, clean opinion, no written findings. It's the highest level of assurance we can give. And so I'll turn now to a couple of highlights that are in this document. If you'll flip back with me a couple of pages previous to page. On this page is the, say this five times fast with me, the Government Finance Officers Association of America Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. This is something that the district applies for and did receive for fiscal year 24. And Neil will be sending this document off to them as well for that award. And I do believe that it will, again, meet the criteria. This is something that probably the cities and counties, the other governments that you come from also apply for from this award. And even though they don't have, compared to, say, for example, the city of Fort Worth, obviously, there's a lot less to account for here, but there's also a lot fewer people to take care of that accounting, especially when things go wrong. So the reason I bring this up is this award, I think, speaks to the quality and the depth of the information that's in this document, and especially it speaks to staff's commitment to providing that information at a high level. GFOA, they basically, they're not really concerned with my audit opinion in terms of, okay, the auditor said it was materially right. Okay, cool. Let's move on. They have a very lengthy checklist that they send this document to several people out of state, someone like myself, I'm a volunteer in that program, who really take this thing and rake it over the coals for internal consistency, for not just the basic accounting rules guidelines, but the a lot of extra requirements as well to make sure that it is a consistent and thoroughly readable document. To give you an example, open with me to pages 30 and 31. Again, as I mentioned, I'm going over, or I'm crossing over a lot of financial information. I think part of the underpinning of that is that I really don't professionally think that there are a whole lot of surprises in here in terms of like fund balance doing something crazy or cash being way different than what it was supposed to be. I think that speaks to the processes that the district has in place to have that information readily at hand throughout the year and not just once a year when the auditors show up. But what we're seeing here on pages 30 and 31 is completely not required to be in this document, but it is something that GFOA's criteria have in here. And honestly, I think it's some of the most interesting information that's in this whole document. The entire back statistical section of this document is only required not by accounting principles, but by that award program. And you'll see, this is where generally you'll see most of the year-over-year information. So you can see, for example, on here on pages, what amounts to 10 years of an income statement, so to speak. And so you can see how the district's expenses and revenues have changed over the years. Halfway down the page, 911 service fees, how they were just short of $21 million this previous year. And you can see those changes over time as the area and as the district have grown. And then a little further up the page, operating grants and contributions, you can see that consists of the last couple of years, that was the NG911 federal money, as well as the Prop 8 state money that has come in. So there's, again, there's a lot to digest here, and I'd be happy to go over anything that might have stuck out to you or any questions that you might have. But I wanted to point this out in that there is a lot of information here and that some of it, a good deal of it, is not required, but goes instead above and beyond, and that I'd encourage you to refer to it as time allows or as you have questions about things, because there is quite a lot that went into it. And as I close, I'd like to thank Anil for all of his help. He has been nothing but communicative and very helpful and rounding up everything that we ask for. And we really appreciate all of his help so that we can have a clean audit here on time. Any questions from the board?
Any questions? Thank you, sir. We appreciate you. Is there an action required?
Your packet, that needs to be signed, that you accept those.
We have a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Signing. Motion made by Chief Hall, seconded by Chief Ostrom. All in favor, say aye. Aye. All opposed, say no.
Aye.
Good job. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, sir. So the next item is purchases over $150,000. RN26-007, radio circuits annual reading.
Yes, request for Astro connectivity for three sites to tie them back to the master sites in the amount of 76.
And Astro connectivity is what?
the back hall to the master sites.
Radio circuits?
Yes, sir. Radio.
Okay. Any questions for Sarah? Need a motion to approve the radios. Chief Hall, motion. Need a second. Seconded by Mayor Richardson. All in favor say yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed say no.
Thank you.
Motion passes. Thank you. Do we have any executive session items? Okay. And do we have any public comments? Seeing none, this meeting is convened at 10:52.
Instructions finished.
Yes. That means we got
work done today. Thank you all.